try not to move, don't breathe, and don't get out of the chair.
For some reason, these chocolate chip cookies are sticking to the roof of my mouth.
Then meet her you shall.
We love stories!
It's time for the Apple Seed, filled with stories for you and your family, all kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. And I'm Sam Payne, your host. Such a pleasure to have you with us today. Always such a pleasure for me every time that you tune in for stories that will fill your home and your heart. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with the people that you love in the living room or around the kitchen table. That kind of sharing of stories can make for memories that last a lifetime. And today we've got some great stuff. You know, our mouths are powerful tools. We make songs and language, rhythm, jokes, laughter, peace, war. We can make a smile. We can make a frown. We spend our lives learning, ideally, to wield the power of our mouths wisely, to speak kindly to others, to communicate our needs, to tell important stories. And today we've handpicked a couple of stories that will celebrate how the things that come out of our mouths have the power to lift and bless lives. Together we'll laugh at every word that comes out of Bill Lepp's mouth as he tells of his roller coaster of a dentist's appointment, an unforgettable mouth story. And later on, we're going to hear from Richard Martin, the story of a sultan's son who uses the power of his words to save a life and change another. And we'll have a conversation later on with Jeff Simpson, our producer, about a recipe, a story about something that goes into your mouth and ought to delight it. But is that how this is going to turn out? Well, you'll find out. We're going to start with that dentist story from Bill Lepp. Bill isn't a fan of your classic dentist, but his dentist isn't your classic dentist. And Bill's isn't your classic dentist's visit. For Bill, visiting the dentist is far more like a ride at a carnival than a chance to heal an ache. Mouth. Recorded live at the Timpanogos Storytelling Festival, here's Bill Lepp with I Love My Dentist, here on the Appleseed.
I really feel like I have inadequate hair for this. There'll be no hay bouncing to attract hungry llamas and that's it. I will now let it down. Thank you. You want me to do it again? I love my dentist. I know it's not something you hear a lot of people say. And when I used to tell this story, I used to ask the audience, are there any dental professionals in the audience, but they never raise their hand because they're afraid of the rest of us. But I want to say that I love my dentist. Several years ago, I was eating dessert. We were having some homemade, made from scratch, fresh out of the oven M&Ms, and I bit down on one with this tooth. Now, you can't see it because my cheek is in the way and also because it's not there anymore. But it felt like somebody took a nail gun and just shot a rusty 16-penny nail into my jaw. And this was like at 7 o'clock at night. Of course, there aren't any dentists open at 7 o'clock at night. So what my wife did is she got on the internet and she looked up natural painkillers. But she didn't type in natural painkillers like you and I would do. No. She typed in natural analgesics, which means natural painkiller. And let me just say, it's a good thing she typed in analgesic and not me, because I'm a horrible speller. But what she discovered was that garlic is a natural analgesic. So she went in the kitchen and she crushed up two cloves of garlic and she put one clove on the outside gum of my sore tooth and one clove on the inside gum of my sore tooth and it kind of burned, but it took the pain away. And then she led me upstairs and she laid me on the couch and she turned the television on and then I knew that I was short for this world. Because she then handed me the remote control. And I lay there and waited to die. And while I waited, she would come in about every hour, and she would just stuff more garlic in my face. Now, nobody wanted to be around me, but I didn't want anyone around me anyway, so it worked out just fine. And in the morning, my wife got up, and she started to call around to local dentists to see if anyone would see me. But no one would see me because the following information needs to be shared with you. One, I am what you call a self-employed artist. And believe it or not, there is no dental package that covers self-employed artists. Also, I have two children. And so my wife and I had spent about the last decade and a half, you know, spending our money to send our children to the dentist. And as a result, neither one of us had been to the dentist in about a decade and a half. And so nobody would see me because every time she would call a dentist, they would say, no, we can't see him because he is not a pre-existing patient. And as I heard this conversation over and over again, I just kept thinking to myself that this sort of language is only the beginning of the problems with the American medical health care system, right? I mean, all healthy people are pre-existing patients, right? I mean, we're all going to be patients at some point. And you never hear a medical professional refer to a current patient as a present existing patient, and they certainly don't refer to patients who have passed on as post-existing patients. But finally, Dr. Lambert agreed to see me, so I got in my car, and I drove down to Dr. Lambert's office, and the receptionist showed me in, and she sat me down in the dental chair, and she said, Dr. Lambert, we'll be in to see you in a moment. And I lay there waiting for Dr. Lambert. And the longer I had to wait for Dr. Lambert, well, the more I started to dislike Dr. Lambert. Now, I had never met Dr. Lambert, but the man was really getting on my nerves. Because I knew that when he came in there, he was going to give me one of those sanctimonious medical professional speeches where he tells me that if I had just spent a few more moments a day practicing better oral hygiene, I wouldn't be in this situation. And that's not what I wanted to hear. And when he finally came in the room, I said, Doc, I said, I got to thank you. I got to thank you so much for seeing me on such short notice. I said, but I have to admit to you, I haven't been to the dentist in over a decade. And he said, don't worry about it. When I was younger, I didn't take very good care of my teeth either. And first I thought, you are off script. I thought that was not sanctimonious at all. That was like the most empathetic thing you could have possibly said. And then I thought, wait a minute. He said when he was younger, he didn't take very good care of his teeth. That makes it sound like maybe he's like a second career dentist. And I thought, who goes into dentistry as their second career, right? Like, how miserable was their first job? And then I thought, who goes into dentistry as their first career? And then I thought, no, wait a minute. He's like a born-again dentist, right? And that's the kind of dentist you want. Like, if you've ever been to one of these preachers that used to be a biker, and I'm talking like a hardcore biker, and then they found the Lord, that is exactly the sort of preacher you want, because you can confess anything to that person, and they've already done it, right? They can't. You can be like, yeah, maybe we were riding our motorcycles down the road, and maybe it was 3 a.m, and maybe we hadn't slept for 36 hours, and maybe we've been drinking a little, but I'm telling you, there was a boat coming down the road toward us, so we got out our pistols and we shot at it, right? And that sort of preacher will get a twinkle in his eye, and he'll be like, yeah. That reminds me of the time that me and Jimmy stovepipe. And then he'll remember that he's a preacher and he can't tell you that story. But he'll be like, have a good day. Right? And so, all that to say, I now floss regularly, brush gently, and go to the dentist like I go to church, which is to say, not quite as often as I should. But I was in there probably about a year ago, and Krista, she's the hygienist, I love her too. Krista gave me the routine cleaning, and then she said, we need to take an x-ray. So she got me up out of this chair, and we walked across the hall, and we went into this room, and she sat me down in this dental chair, and then she took the little plastic, you know, a little plastic filmy flangey thing, got them little flanges on the side, and they jammed that way back into your mouth, like 3 feet further than a snake could handle it, right? And they're like, bite down on this. Try not to move. Don't breathe. And don't get out of the chair. And then just to make sure that I can neither move, breathe, nor get out of the chair, Krista then took a 40-pound lead apron and just dropped it on my chest, Velcroed it around the back of my neck, pushed the camera up against the side of my face, left the room, shut the door. And I heard the camera go, click. And I thought, now Krista will come back in the room. But Krista did not come back in the room. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I started to second guess myself. I thought, maybe I didn't hear that camera go click. And I thought, no, I heard that camera go click. And then I thought, maybe this is some sort of slow exposure X-ray machine. And I thought, no, no, that's stupid, right? X-rays are dangerous. That's why I'm wearing a 40-pound lead apron. That's why Krista left the room. And then I thought, maybe something happened to Krista. Maybe she fell, hit her head. You know, maybe when she went to press the button to take the picture, she got electrocuted. She was just dead out there in the hall. Or maybe she'd been eaten by a giant Venus flytrap, you know? And I wanted to go investigate, but Krista had said, don't get out of the chair. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I don't care what Krista said. I'm going to take a breath. And so I took a deep breath. I can do this. And then when that happened, the panic started to subside, and I could hear voices on the other side of the wall. I could hear Dr. Lambert's voice, and I could hear Krista's voice, and I could hear a man who was clearly in anguish. And I had a series of thoughts. I thought to myself, one, that guy is going through what I had been going through a year before, and I ought to feel blessed that I am no longer in that situation. And then I thought, I also ought to feel blessed on that man's behalf, or however that works, that he has such caring and empathetic medical professionals to take care of him in his time of need. And then I thought, I am just going to sit here, considering those circumstances, I am just going to sit here and be patient. Well, that lasted about 20 seconds. And I started to get bored. I looked around the room. Right up against my face here was the camera. And then over here, connected to the chair by like an arm, was that tray with the blue paper napkin on it. And then it's got all the pokey pointy dental tools on it that they jam down in your mouth. And they're like, oh, your gums bleed easy. And I'm like, yeah, you cut them with a scalpel, they do. And then also connected to the chair by some kind of crazy arm, we have a sink, the dental sink, but ours has two faucets. One's like 18 inches tall. It's an inverted J. It's got a button. You put your cup under there, your little Dixie cup, and you press the button, and then swishy swish, and then you spit into a little different sink that's got a faucet that's like an inch and a half long, and you press the button, and then that rinses away. So I played with those buttons for a while. Like I was trying to do a laser show, right? Like the Bohemian Rhapsody. And then I tapped out SOS on those buttons, thinking that somewhere in their building there might be a conscientious plumber. And he'd be like, someone is tapping out SOS on the plumbing features. I must investigate. And then, connected to that sink by a long rubber hose was a water gun. Now, this was not a toy, okay? This was medical equipment capable of shooting a laser beam of water that could remove decades of impacted plaque. And trust me, I know. And I was kind of was reaching for that gun, thinking to myself, you know what? I bet that with that gun, I could shoot a hole right through the drywall. And I was reaching for it when I thought to myself, no, no matter how empathetic Dr. Lambert is. If he comes in here and I'm shooting holes in the wall, he's not going to be happy. So I thought, just let that go. And so I looked down beside me, and on the floor beside me, there was that foot pad, you know, that the dentist can press a button, and the chair goes up, and another button, and the chair goes down. It's the same piece of equipment that your barber or your beautician has, but in this case, it's medical equipment, so it costs $38,000. And I thought, I have always wanted to press one of those buttons. So I reached down, and I pressed a button. And the chair went clunk, and it started to descend. And it went down about 18 inches, and it went clunk, and it stopped. And I thought, that was fun. And that did not hurt. Therefore, I have not learned a thing. So I am going to press another button. So I reached back and I pressed another button. And the chair went clunk, and it started to ascend. And I thought, this chair is going to go up about 18 inches, and it's going to go clunk, and it's going to stop. But it did not stop. It continued to ascend. It continued to not stop. And I was getting closer and closer to the ceiling. And I was thinking, I am going to be crushed to death against the ceiling of my dentist's office. And then I thought, I don't want to be crushed to death against the ceiling of my dentist's office. Then I thought, I don't want to be crushed to death against the ceiling of any medical professional's office. But at least I'm not in my physician's, because if I were in my physician's, I might just be wearing the paper robe. And then I thought, worse yet, what if I were my urologist, right? Then I'd be naked. And I don't want to be naked when I'm squished to death against the ceiling of a medical professional's office. And then I thought, your dentist almost never says to you, go in the other room, take your pants off, I'll be in a minute. And just a note, if your dentist ever does say that to you, you go find another dentist, okay? So I thought, I got to do something to get myself out of this situation, because I couldn't get out of the chair, right? Because Krista had said, don't get out of the chair. And I am a product of the American public school system. And I know that when an authority figure says, don't get out of the chair, you don't get out of the chair. So I thought, well, I'll just reach back and press the button. But I couldn't reach the button anymore. And so I thought, I got to do something. And then that tray with the pokey pointy dental tools was rising with me. And I thought, if I take one of those tools and I turn it, invert it so the blunt end is down, I can drop it, I can hit one of those buttons, I can stop this madness. But by that point, I couldn't see the foot pad anymore, so I had to take the one that's got like the little bent wire, and then the mirror that's like the size of a quarter, right? I had to bite down on that and kind of aim like... And about halfway down, the pokey pointy thing re-inverted, twang. It hit the linoleum right beside the footbed, so I took another one and another one. And then I was just like taking handfuls and throwing them like a shotgun. And finally, one of the little pokey pointy things hit a button, but it wasn't the stop, the ascent button. It was the start, the recline button. And pretty soon I was parallel with the floor, and then I was at like a negative 35 degree angle. And if a carpenter had come by and put shingles and a chimney on me, I would have made a great roof. And I was holding on to the armrest as hard as I could, but now I was inverted, and that 40-pound lead apron, it slid off my chest, and now it was like flapping out behind my back. It was like a cape, but it wasn't like a useful cape, okay? It wasn't like it was trying to help me fly. It was more like an anchor trying to pull me head first into the linoleum, plus the Velcro was choking me out, so I was like, and my shirt was riding up, coins were coming out of my pocket, bouncing off my chin, my keys came out, almost took my eye out. I thought, if my pocket knife comes out of my pocket, I'm a dead man. Now, fortunately, I had my wallet in my back pocket. Now, I'm one of these people, I can't keep my wallet thin, and it's not cash, or I just shut up about it, right? No, it's that I drive like 30,000 miles a year, and so I need gasoline, and I need, Coco. And so I go to gas stations. And I go in and I buy gas and cocoa. And then the clerk behind the counter is always like, they're always so sincere, right? They're like, would you like to join our coffee club? If you buy 5 cups of coffee, you get the 6th cup free. And I'm always feel bad if I feel like they're going to get fired if they don't sign enough people up for their stupid club. So I'm like, yeah. And they give you a card. And then you put that card in your wallet. And so now, I mean, I am 4 cups of coffee away from a free cup of coffee at every gasoline station on the other side of the Mississippi River. And as a result, my wallet's this thick, so I gotta take it out of my pocket when I sit down, like when otherwise I'd drive like this, you know, or I'd only get half my haircut. And when Krista was giving me the cleaning, I took it out of my pocket, but she said I was just gonna be in this seat for a minute, so I left my wallet jammed in my pocket, which was good, because it was caught in the crease of the seat, so it was kind of anchoring me in, but I was still going up, and I was starting to slide out of my blue jeans just a little bit, and then wham, I hit the ceiling. And the chair went clunk, and it stopped. And it started to descend. And I thought, whew. And it went down about 18 inches. And it went clunk, and it started to ascend. So now I was being hammered into the dentist's ceiling. And every time I hit, something else would happen. One of my shoes would go flying off. Then my other shoe would go flying. I'd be like, right running shoe, left running shoe. And then... It's not your fault. You're just up here before me, and now it's in my head. So anyway. Or like, you know, my shirt would come further up. All right, slide a little further out of my blue. I had to do something to save myself. And that's when I realized that the sink had risen with me, and connected to the sink was that water gun. And I thought, if I took that water gun, I can shoot the button. If I can shoot the button, I can stop this madness. So I reached and I got the water gun, and I was trying to, but I couldn't see the foot pad, so nothing was happening. I was banging. And then I thought, I saw the intercom button on the opposite wall. And I thought, if I can shoot the intercom button, I can call the receptionist. And so I changed hands. But now, it was difficult to shoot because you have to remember that I was at a negative 35 degree angle. I was going up and down like this. I was being choked out by a 40-pound lead apron. I had to hold on with one hand, reach around the x-ray machine with the other hand. And finally, I fired, and sure enough, put a hole right through the drywall. In fact, I put about 6 holes through the drywall before I finally hit the intercom button, and the receptionist said, "May I help you?" And I said, huh, because I still had that thing in my mouth. And she said, "Dr. Lambert will be in to see you in a moment." And just then, I don't know exactly what happened, but the rubber hose connecting the sink to the water gun, somewhere in the middle, it just ruptured. It just tore in half. So now half of it was just loose there. It was just like shooting around the room like a loose fire hose. There was water going everywhere. It was hitting the ceiling, cascading off the ceiling, running back down on me, going out my chest and my nose, trying to drown me. And I don't know if it was the up and down or the water or the what, but I finally... Finally, I just slid right out of my blue jeans. I just came, and I managed to grab hold of the armrest by my knee, but I was hanging there, water flowing everywhere, you know, upside down in my underwear, and that's when Dr. Lambert came back in the room. He didn't say nothing. He just walked over to that foot pad and kicked some of those tools out of the way, and he pressed a button with his toe, and the chair started to descend, and he pressed another button with his toe, and the chair started to unrecline, and I sort of wiggled back up into the seat, and by the time I got to the bottom, I was back in the chair, and I opened my mouth, and he reached in, and he pulled out that little filmy, flangy plastic thing, and he said, "Well, everything looks fine here." And then, like any good medical professional, he said, "I'll leave the room while you get your pants back on." And that is why I love my dentist.
Master of the tall tale, Bill Lepp, with a story called I Love My Dentist, recorded live at the Timpanogos Storytelling Festival in Lehigh, Utah. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a story from Richard Martin, a story about a sultan's son who uses the power of his words to save one life and change another, and a conversation with Jeff Simpson about making cookies. You won't want to miss a word. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard the master of the tall tale, Bill Lepp, with a story called I Love My Dentist. And in just a little bit, we're going to get to a story from Richard Martin, a story about a sultan's son who uses the power of his words to save one life and change another. It's a story called The Silent Princess. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Stories come into our lives in so many ways, from families passing them along, telling to telling, from the pages of great books, from radio and podcasts, through the terrific songs we love, and the things we see on screen, and even through the making and sharing of great food together. And exploring all of the ways that great stories get into our hearts and minds is part of what we love here on The Appleseed. And I'm joined in studio by our producer, Jeff Simpson. And, Jeff loves to talk about food. I'm just telling you. He'll be the first to admit it. Right, Jeff?
Absolutely. And I am so excited to talk to you about food today, and specifically about baked goods.
Yeah, yeah.
Growing up in my household, I don't know that I was known as the best baker. I think what my family discovered was I really liked to bake, and they really liked not to bake but still reap the benefits. And so they always told me, this is my theory anyway, they always told me that I was the best baker in the house. I don't know if that's true, but a couple of nicknames they gave me were Jeffrey Crocker, obviously.
Jeffrey Crocker. And that sounds like a founding father almost, you know.
And then alternatively, Jeff Boyardee. Yes. So those
I wasn't ready for that one. That one got me.
And one of the things that I loved to make most were cookies. Mm. And I would use them often to try to woo girls of my age into, you know, going on dates with me or to at least like me or pay attention to me,
oh,
right?
Wow.
And one of the cookies that I love to make, of course, everybody's favorite chocolate chip cookie, right?
Mm, yes.
And this particular recipe called for about 3.5 cups of flour, which is a lot of flour. And my mother would keep her flour and her sugar in these big round jars that you often see bulk candy put into these jars, right?
Yeah.
And so she would have these scoops that you would take and scoop them into the big Bosch mixer. And so I went to one of the jars and started scooping out what I thought was white flour.
Oh, no.
And so I go through the whole process. I put in all the eggs and the vanilla and the sugars and the butter, and I bake it at whatever temperature I was supposed to bake them at. And I let them cool off a little bit. And as I'm putting them in my mouth to taste them, I notice that for some reason, these chocolate chip cookies are sticking to the roof of my mouth. And I go back to the cupboard and I take a closer look at what I thought was the white flour. And I ask my mom to come into the kitchen. She says, "That's not white flour. That is powdered milk." I had just put 3.5 cups of powdered milk into this recipe. And my sweet dad, I don't know if he was just being nice or if he genuinely, this was his opinion, that these cookies tasted just fine. They were good. But yeah, if you make cookies with powdered milk, they're going to stick to the roof of your mouth.
And it didn't, you know, sometimes you stumble into a recipe that becomes a family favorite, but it doesn't sound like that one got repeated.
The recipe was not duplicated, but I have the story.
You know, my mom, as you tell that story, it makes me think of my mom, my wonderful mom, who was a terrific cook, who is a terrific cook. And when I was a kid, my mom would make things, and every once in a while she would
she would leave a key ingredient out or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
She'd serve us the food anyway and say, "These today we're having something missing pancakes," or "Today we're having something missing."
Yeah.
And we something missing whatever was a tradition at our house.
Yeah.
And we would have to pick out the thing that mom had left out of the recipe on accident.
Those are some of the best experiences that you have in the kitchen is when you really want to make something delicious and you don't realize until you've already started the process that you're missing probably 3 to 5 of the ingredients that you need. And so you start looking up online, okay, what's a substitute for garlic or what's a substitute for lemon juice? And then other times you just get creative and say, you know what? I don't even think there is a substitute for that. So we're just either going to omit that altogether or let's throw in this other ingredient and see where it takes us, right?
The strange concoctions that come out of the kitchen of Jeff Boyardee. I can't tell you how much I love that. I think that's so great.
And you know what else is interesting, Sam, is that you can't beat yourself up too much when you have these mishaps in the kitchen, especially when you think about all of the failures that go into making some of the greatest recipes and dishes ever concocted, right? People had to fail probably 100 times before they came across something that was amazing.
Oh, that's right.
All the experimentation, all of the, you know, the mishaps where you're burning something or you're not getting the cooking time just right. So a lot of failure goes into this. You shouldn't beat yourself up.
That's true. You know, when I was a kid, my mom had on the shelf a copy of the famous Tassajara bread book, kind of one of the canonic Bibles of bread baking, right? And in the introduction to the Tassajara bread book, the guy who wrote that book says, you know, if you burn your bread or if your bread has some other fatal flaw, you know, it's not that you did it wrong. It's just that's just the way you did it this time.
I love that.
And so we have often quoted that to each other as something has come across the stove that's not exactly how we thought it would turn out.
You know, I have yet to make a loaf of bread. I've always wanted to, especially a loaf of sourdough bread. So why don't I go fail 100 times? Then I'll come back and we'll do another one of these on my bread
with
experience.
With 100 more stories,
yes.
Right? Well, what a pleasure to have had Jeff Simpson talking with us about powdered milk chocolate chip cookies that stick to the roof of your mouth. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with the people that you love. And stories that take place in the kitchen are so often some of the most adventurous, some of the most exciting, some of the greatest stories that we know. We hope that even now in your mind are coming stories of adventures in the kitchen. Pleasure to have you, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Stories come into our lives in so many ways, through the pages of things we read in books, from movies and television, to stories that we pass down from teller to listener, even through generations and generations and generations. It's a pleasure to listen to Jeff talk about a story of spending time in a kitchen, cooking food and making food. Food can be a wonderful catalyst for great stories. It was a pleasure to have Jeff with us in the studio. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a story by Richard Martin, a story called The Silent Princess. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, a conversation with Jeff Simpson about making powdered milk cookies. And before that, a story from Bill Lepp called I Love My Dentist. Up next, we're going to hear a story from Richard Martin. This is a story of a sultan's son who finds himself cursed to fall in love with a supposed silent princess. And as the son grows into a man, he wonders where the silent princess will be, having failed to find her after years of growth and grand adventure. Soon enough, he stumbles upon someone who happens to know where the princess is. But the search for her, he's warned, may come with deadly consequences. Will he finish the task, find the princess? How will things turn out? Here's Richard Martin with The Silent Princess, right here on The Appleseed.
For my last tale,
I'll take a story from old Baghdad. Now, once upon a time, in old Baghdad, there lived a sultan. A sultan who had one son, a young boy whose favorite toy was a golden ball. And that boy would throw the ball high in the air and catch it again. He'd throw it once more and watch the sun sparkle as it came down to his hand. One day, the young boy, he was playing by the well, the place outside the town where the women came with their jars to fetch the water. He was playing with his golden ball when he saw an old woman walking towards the well to fetch some water. She had a jar on her shoulder. And the young boy, as young boys sometimes do, he just took that ball and he threw it at the old woman, and her jar smashed into 100 pieces on the ground. She saw who had thrown the ball. She turned to him. "You, for that I curse you. May you fall in love with a silent princess." Now the young boy, as young boys often don't, he thought no more of these words. He thought no more of these words, that is, until he grew up a little and his heart turned to things of love. And then he remembered the words the old woman had said. The silent princess. The silent princess. Who is the silent princess? Where does she live? Why is she silent? And how beautiful is she? And so it was, as it often is when love gets hold. He could think of nothing but the silent princess. In the end, he just took to his bed and did not want to drink or eat. At last, his father heard and came to see what was the matter with his son. And then it was that the boy did, as young boys sometimes do. He told his father all that had happened. "Oh, my boy, I do not know anything about the silent princess, neither who she is nor where you can find her. But I'll tell you one thing. Tomorrow, do not stay here. Tomorrow, get out of this bed. Tomorrow, put on your strongest shoes, take your warmest cloak, and go out into the world. And if fortune will have you meet the silent princess, then meet her you shall." And so that is what the young boy did. The next day, he put on his warmest cloak. He put on his strongest shoes. He set out down the road into the wide, wide world. But indeed, whoever he asked, wherever he looked, he could find nothing about the silent princess. But still he walked on, and the weeks turned to months, and the months turned to a year. A year and a day it was when he came to the foot of a great mountain. And when he came there, he met an old man. And when he asked that old man the question, he asked everyone, "Can you tell me where I can find the silent princess?" The old man said, "Yes, I can, for she lives at the top of this mountain in a castle with her father, the king." "Can you tell me the quickest way to get there?" "I can. It's straight up this road. And this road is the quickest way for you to lose your head. For she has sworn she shall never speak until she meets a man who can make her speak. But anyone who tries and fails, his head will be cut off at dawn." but a young man. A young man who wants to follow the love in his heart. Will he hear of danger? Of course not. And the young man set off straight up that road as fast as his feet would carry him. He came to the castle, he knocked on the gate. It was the king himself who opened. Another young man come to lose his head. Look at the ground beneath your feet, white with the skulls of others who have tried and failed. Young man, keep your head and return now. What use is my head when I have already lost my heart? No, take me to your daughter, the princess. So the king called for a servant. Take this young man to the silent princess. Take this young man to the silent princess and stay there as a witness. For if she does not speak, he shall be beheaded at dawn. The servant took the young man to the room where the silent princess sat on a great cushion, she covered with her seven veils. The young man did not say a word. He just drew up a cushion and he sat down. He stayed there. He sat there. And after a while, he looked at the servant. Hey, have you not got a story to tell? You know, a tale to pass the time. I am not here to speak. I am here as a witness. Well, in that case, I'll tell us a story. Once upon a time, there were three young men, three friends, and they each loved the same young woman. Now, the young woman could not decide which one of them to marry. So she gave them a task. She said they should all go out into the world, and the one who did the most, that one she would marry. The three young men agreed, and as friends, off they went together. The first young man, now, he did much. He learned the secret of sight, and he was able to see to the ends of the world. The second young man, why, he learned the secret of flight. He had a magic carpet which would fly through the air as fast as fast. And the third young man, why, he too did much, for he learnt the secret of life, and anything which had died, he could make alive again. One day, the three friends were sitting together when the first looked to the ends of the world, looked to the house of the woman they loved. Cried, "There, I see she is lying on her deathbed." "Hurry," cried the second. "We must fly there, onto my magic carpet." And the three of them flew. But when they arrived, they met the young woman's father, carrying the dead body to her grave. "Do not bury her," cried the third. "Let me work my magic art." And indeed he did. And the young woman was brought back to life. The three men were delighted they had saved her. But the three men each claimed that, of course, she should now marry him. "For," said the first, "it was my gift of sight which enabled us to know of her terrible predicament." "No," cried the second, "if it had not been for my magic carpet, what help would that have been?" "Ah," cried the third, "without my art, she would now be in her grave." And as the young man, telling the story, said those words, why, he suddenly fell silent. The servant who'd been listening cried, "But what happened? Who did she marry? Who did the woman belong to?" "I do not know. And I so long to know the answer to that question." "Indeed, it's a difficult one. I tell you what, tomorrow, When the king's ministers meet, we should ask them because they are wise men. They will give us the answer. You forget. Tomorrow, I am to be beheaded at dawn. At this, the silent princess could remain silent no longer. Beneath her seven veils, she rose to her feet. Fools! First, it is clear the young woman belongs to no man. But if she did choose to marry, of course she would decide to marry the man who had given her life. And then she realised she'd been tricked into speaking. She sat down. Just as the door opened, the king came to lead the young man to his execution.
But, cried the servant, but, she spoke.
She spoke?
Yes.
The king turned to his daughter, who silently showed with her fingers that it was not enough for the young man to make her speak once. He must make her speak three times if he was not to be beheaded. And so it was. So it was. The very next evening, she was sitting there when the young man was brought back to her room. There she was, on her cushion, beneath her seven veils. The young man just drew up a cushion, sat down, did not say a word, until after a while he turned to the servant.
Hey, have you not got a tale to tell? You know, a story to pass the time.
I am not here to speak. I am here as a witness.
Well,
I'll tell you a story then. Once upon a time, there were three people. Now, this was a man and his wife and the coachman who was driving them through a large forest. Now, the forest was large and the day was short. And soon they found that they were overtaken by the night and they would have to spend the dark night in the forest. Unfortunately, they were not alone, for there were robbers in the forest. Robbers who attacked, who stole the money. The robbers, although they spared the woman, beheaded the two men and left. In the darkness, when the woman discovered what had happened, the only thing she could think of doing was, in her desperation, to take the two heads and to put them back on the bodies and to go onto her knees and pray to heaven for Allah to work a miracle. Well, if a miracle cannot happen in a story, where can it happen? And so Allah heard that prayer and granted a miracle. And as the morning sun rose, why, life returned to those bodies. But then it was the woman discovered what a terrible mistake she had made. Why, she had put the wrong head on the wrong body. The two heads immediately began to argue whose wife this really was. Why, she's mine, cried the head of the coachman, because there is more of her husband's body underneath here. No, she's mine, cried the husband's head. But no! And as the young man telling the story told those words, he fell silent. Well, who did the woman marry? Who did she belong to? I do not know. And I so long to know the answer to that question. True, it's a difficult one. When the king's ministers come, then we should ask them. You forget, I am to be beheaded at dawn. At this, the silent princess could remain silent no longer, but stood to her feet beneath her seven veils. Fools, she cried. First, it is clear the young woman belonged to no man, but if she did choose to marry, she would choose the husband with the head of her husband, because in that head are all the memories of their previous life together. And she realised she'd been tricked again. But that is why, the next evening, the young man was taken once again to the silent princess. who again sat in that room on her cushion beneath her seven veils. He drew up his cushion, he sat down, he did not say a word. Until,
after a while, he turned to the servant. Hey, have you not got a tale to tell? You know, a story to pass the time.
I am not here to speak, I am here as a witness. Ugh. Well, then I'll tell you a story. Once upon a time, there were three men. Now, these three men, the first, he was a carver of wood. He took pieces of wood and with his knife, with his chisels, he carved beautiful things out of that wood. The second was a tailor who took cloth and made beautiful clothes. And the third, he was a man of learning, a man of prayer. Now, the three men were travelling together, and they were travelling through a forest. And it must have been the forest from the story last night, because it was big and the day was short. Well, when they found they would have to spend the night in the forest, they knew the robbers from the story of last night were also there. So they decided they would keep watch. As they made a fire, two men went to sleep, and the first man, the carver of wood, it was his turn to keep the first watch. And he sat there. He saw on the edge of the clearing in the firelight most beautiful piece of wood. It was large. And he picked it up and he looked at the beauty which was in that piece of wood. And he reached for his knife. He reached for his chisels. And all of the time of his watch, he worked and he worked on that piece of wood until he had carved the most beautiful young woman. But he was exhausted by his work. He had just enough strength to wake the next man and to fall asleep. The next man, the tailor, he suddenly noticed in the light of the fire a beautiful young woman. He saw the beauty and thought, with my art, I can make her lovelier still. He took his most beautiful bolt of cloth. He took his scissors. He took his needles. And he worked and he worked. He cut and he sewed. And he made the most beautiful dress. And he put that on the young woman. But by the end of his watch, he was exhausted, had just enough strength to wake the third man and fall asleep. The third man, the man of learning, the man of prayer, as he was sitting in the firelight, he suddenly saw, standing there by a tree, the beautiful figure of a woman, beautiful clothes. He reached out a hand, he touched her. Oh no, she was only a wooden woman. No, such beauty must have life. Such beauty needed life. He went down on his knees and he prayed to heaven for Allah to work a miracle. And if a miracle cannot happen in a story, when can it happen? And so Allah heard his prayer and granted life to that wooden woman, who was wooden no longer. And the man spent the rest of his watch teaching that woman to speak. And as the morning sun rose in the east, so it was the other two men, they woke up. They saw what miracle had happened. And of course, the three men all claimed that the woman should now marry him. And as the young man spoke those words, he fell silent.
But who did the woman marry? Who did she belong to?
That I do not know, and I so long to know the answer to that question. But as the silent princess heard those words, she too, beneath her seven veils, slowly rose to her feet. First, it is clear that the young woman belongs to none of the men. But I'm sure if she chose to marry, she would choose, as I have chosen, to marry the man who has given her life and has taught her to speak. The young man reached out his hand to her. Princess, I shall spend the rest of my life showing you you have chosen wisely. And so it was. And so it was that the two married. Of course, they had many children. They were even able to find the old woman whose jar that golden ball had broken all those years ago. They brought her to the palace. She was the nurse to the children. Oh, and she told them many, many tales. And the tale I have just told you was always their favourite.
Richard Martin with The Silent Princess here on The Appleseed. Richard Martin now lives in Germany with his wife and continues to master the German language, telling stories in English and German. He has a special love for words, even words in different languages, and knows as much as the princess in the story that words are life, and he seeks to inspire people in countries all over the world with the power of his words. He also teaches us in this story that curses can actually turn out to be profound blessings. A pleasure to bring you that tale. And also, of course, a pleasure to bring you a story from Bill Lepp, the master of the tall tale, the story recorded live at the Timpanogos Storytelling Festival in Lehigh, Utah, a story called I Love My Dentist. And fun to talk with Jeff Simpson, too. Jeff is, of course, the producer of The Appleseed. This hour was written by Isobo Ng. Our audio engineer is Stuart Foster. You can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed. Look there for an archive of all of the episodes of the show, more than 1,000 episodes and thousands of stories for your listening pleasure anytime you like. You can also download the BYU Radio app for all kinds of ways to listen to all of the programs produced by BYU Radio. The Appleseed is pleased and proud to be part of that family of programs. Google the Appleseed podcast and subscribe for something new just about every day from the show. Not only full hour-long episodes, but mini episodes. We call them extras for when you just have a few minutes and want to fill that few minutes with a great story. I'm Sam Payne, and I can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by The Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.